I don't like this business of preaching to fans.
Calm down, Greg. It's soccer. It's soccer.
You know anything else about soccer?
Not much. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the stadium watching a game on TV. It's just the guy's not good enough. The guy is just not good enough.
Simon, I don't know if you're big into New Year's resolutions, but, you know, wondering if maybe you pledged to come out of your shell a little bit in 2015.
Kind of pisses me off, to be honest.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXMFC. Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe. It's a new week. I almost said I am Monday.
Clearly.
It is Monday. We are reviewing week 23.
Unless you're listening on Sirius Radio, and then it's Tuesday.
Yeah.
Happy Tuesday.
Unless you're listening on Sirius. That's David Goss. You know him well. Ben, the researcher bear, here with us on this Monday to break down MLS Heineken rivalry week. That's where we'll start. And one of the big topics of conversation from those games is, of course, the dismissal of Frank Klopas in Montreal. RDS's Patrick LeDuc will join us to discuss that in just a bit. He's got all the inside information.
His name is literally the Duke.
Yeah.
I
don't know that it translates quite
that. Does it not?
Simply.
Not an exact translation.
Yeah. I had a sociology.
That's awfully simplistic of you.
I had a sociology experiment. I bought a lot of John Wayne posters and would put them on the outside of my room in college to see if people would all of a sudden subconsciously associate with me with the Duke.
Didn't happen for you.
It happened once. A girl texted me and she goes, like, 4 years later and was like, I just saw a John Wayne movie and I thought of you. And I was like, yes.
So that really worked on the spot. Like, that really worked for you in
all
college.
That conditioning.
You just have to wait 4 years, though.
Well, yeah, of course. It's conditioning. It's to condition anything.
After you leave college and leave all these people, then it works.
4 years later, the dog starts drooling for David Goss here. Let's jump right into the results. We'll get to all of it in just a bit. U.S. Men's National Team roster reaction coming in the second segment. A great mailbag for you. We've had some emails recently that said, hey, the mailbag has been skimpy. You've got to get it going. We're going to try to do that in today's show. But first, Sunday night, the nightcap for this weekend, New York Red Bulls, DC United at Red Bull Arena. I was there. It was a great environment, a great game. New York waltzed 3-0 victory for the Red Bulls. They're still in second place, but that's just because they lost midweek to Chicago. Had they done that, they would have jumped DC United. Ah, that's it. That's the only reason.
Yeah, I mean, because they lost the game.
Yeah, they lost the game. Right. It was on the road. What are you going to do? This was a dominating performance. What do we see from this one, guys?
I think this is the best. Well, I don't know.
Were you about to say the best team? You were about to say.
No, the LA Galaxy. No, I was going to say best performance of the season. Because of the quality.
By any team or by the Red Bulls?
By any team. Because of the quality of the opponent. They beat the number one team in the Eastern Conference, and I don't think DC was on the field.
Didn't
outside
like
of Bill
Orlando
Hamid.
Beat LA like 5-0 a few months ago.
Yeah, but that was a different LA team.
But that was like could have been that was a really good performance at the
this
time.
This is a different DC team. I believe this is their third straight defeat. They're saying we are definitely concerned. Something is not
CCL
quite right.
Well, CCL in midweeks, you know, so it's been a compact schedule. But New York Red Bulls dominated every facet of this game. If Bill Hamid wasn't there, it would have been a serious LA Galaxy scoreline.
Yeah, it would have been a 6-0
but
loss.
3-0, and I don't think DC ever threatened New York's goal.
There was that one cross where Rolf was going in.
Right.
And he could have tapped it in. He kind of missed it.
And that was very early on.
That was early on.
That was
like 20th minute, I think.
Moment.
That was about it.
Yeah. So you're searching for examples there. In this game, Bradley Wright Phillips, 2 goals, 1 assist. A great game for him. My fantasy captain sent me to victory, which is really what I needed from him. But Sasha Kljestan, Ben, he was a guy at the beginning of the year.
My fantasy captain.
At the beginning of the year, there were some questions about the way he was playing and how he fit in. Everybody knew he had the talent. It seems like he's found himself really floating kind of in between the lines. The guy that unbalances opposing defenses.
Hey, he was just finding those pockets of space. I mean, Kitchen and Halstey were totally separated. No idea. They weren't protecting the back line at all. Kljestan was just receiving the ball, able to pick his head up, either go at a defender, find BWP, find Sam or Grella out on the wings, and he was just picking his spots. It was an amazing performance. By
him. Yeah, great performance.
Grella,
by
the way, since Sean Wright Phillips has come on, 4 assists in 4 straight games. I mean, the guy's just taking it to another level.
That's when you talk about competition. This is what people are talking about. It forces him to a new level. We weren't sure how he'd do at the beginning of the season, but he's become a great option for them. That's kind of the theme of the Red Bulls right now. Another interesting note from this one. After the whistle, Ben Olsen and Jesse Marsh, I'm not going to say exchanged words. They had a long-running conversation that was
one-sided conversation.
Right, that was a little bit bizarre. You know, you go through the handshake line, and Jesse Marsh and Olsen get their quick take or whatever. But then Benny follows him basically to the center circle Yapping a little bit. And
he clearly wanted to talk about something, and Jesse Marsh gave him a quick response and was not interested in having a conversation.
After the game, Grant Wall asked Jesse Marsh, hey, what was going on there? One-word answer, nothing. So this is one to pay attention to. We'll watch this one as the season goes on. These are two teams that could meet up again in the playoffs.
Just one statistical note here. Red Bulls, plus 15 goal differential so far this season. Every other team in the East, know the team has a goal differential better than two. So they're clearly the favorites in the East right now.
Clearly the class of the East right now. I believe 75% favorites, according to some of those internet models out there, to win the East. 35% for the Supporters' Shield. Interesting stuff. Also in the East, in MLS Heineken.
There are
Heineken.
A couple threats coming on, though. We'll talk about it in the second segment.
Yeah, MLS Heineken rivalry. Toronto 2, Montreal 1. That was the story on the field. Michael Bradley and Josie Altidore getting the goals for Toronto. Sebastian Jovinko was injured in this one. He has an adductor issue. He left in the 51st minute. He is going to go to Italy, but he is not going to play. He was called up for national team duty. We'll talk about that a little bit more in the second segment, along with some other international call-ups, including on the American side. But the big story here, guys, is that Frank Klopas was dismissed after the game. A terrible August for the Montreal Impact, a bad 11-game stretch. It was apparently a decision made by committee, the decision being that they needed, quote, new momentum, and Mauro Biello is going to be the one that gives that to him. He's a club legend, been there for basically 20 years, an assistant coach, now the interim head coach, and they said they'll see what happens at the end of the year. The reason why I say they is it's not just Joey Saputo making these decisions by edict. It seems to be a group of folks that are doing it. Let's go to a man on the ground, a man with a bunch of insight into this club, Patrick Leduc, an RDS commentator. You can follow him on Twitter, at PatLeduc15. Pat, how's it going, man?
Hi, guys. I'm doing fine.
Great. So let's just get started. I mean, at this point, a new coach mid-season, that almost feels like typical Montreal, as typical as it can be in just 3-plus years in MLS. What do you make?
Yes, we'd come to expect it. You know, you have to realize that last season with Frank Klopas was mediocre, and results weren't there. And some of the observers were kind of surprised that the management and that the organization had kept faith in Klopas for the 2015 season. And the Champions League campaign was beyond expectation. Reaching the final probably gave Klopas a lot more time than we expected him to have, especially with an average start to MLS season. And after a while, the team seemed to be on the verge of reaching the top four or five places in the East section. So it looked as if maybe Klopas' project was going to succeed, but the last 11 games, the second third of the season, was pretty bad again. The team's not playing that bad, but you get the feeling that there's no that the guys aren't as motivated as they were during Champions League, and the results aren't there. So the team needed a change, and there's a sense of panic too, because the results haven't been good in the past 11 games. But at the same time, you need to react. Montreal had a good season in 2013 for about two-thirds of the season, and then it kind of collapsed at the end. So I think management is looking at acting so that history doesn't repeat itself.
We'll get to the future here with Mauro Biello, and then perhaps another coach here in the offseason you'd expect. But I want to ask you about more of a kind of a cultural thing with the club. Is this a matter of impatience? Is this a matter of ownership? People are quick to say that Joey Saputo has an itchy trigger finger, so to speak, with coaches. What do you think it is about the culture of this club that has led to these kind of coaching changes in, like I said, just under 4 years?
So, yes, you're right to address those facts. The fact that there have been a number of coaching changes, and there's a lot of there's a history of conflicts between coaches and the management or the owner. We started off in MLS with an MLS experienced guy, not a, not someone who had coaching experience, Jesse Marsh, but somebody who knew the league. And I think there was a clash from the start between Nick DeSantis, the sporting director, and Jesse Marsh. And, you know, it wasn't going to succeed in the long term. The second option was a European coach. And at first that seemed to be working, but I think they realized that he didn't invest in himself enough into learning about the league, and I'm referring to Marco Schallebaum. So that solution didn't work either. And then they found a compromise. They found an experienced MLS coach, Klopas, who has this European flair. He has the roots, you know, and Greeks and Italians are culturally pretty close, I would say. So it seemed as if it was the compromise that would work for the impact, but the results haven't been there. So you need to know that with the impact, I think the coach needs to be compatible with the owners and the management team now, because DeSantis has a different role. And that's the first quality, the first criteria you're going to be looking for, even before qualifications, experience, and, you know, coaching skills. And I think Mauro Biello now has that quality. He's been a loyal player, assistant coach. He's been part of the organization for 20 years now. So he fits that first, you know, that category that you're looking for. And then there are questions about his qualifications, about his experience. But I think you need to give him a chance. And if he succeeds, and succeeding would be making it to the playoffs, I think he might get a shot at being the coach for next season as well.
So who's going to make these decisions? Because this is part of what I'm a little bit confused about, Pat. Because Joey Saputo is obviously the owner. It's a family-owned business. This is his club. But then you have Nick DeSantis, you have Braz, you have all these guys, and it kind of seemed like in the press release that it was made to be a decision by committee. Do I have that right, or was this from straight from the top down, and that's just how it's being portrayed publicly?
You got that right. Decision by committee, that's the way it seems to be working now with the impact. It used to be Saputo from the top down making decisions with his guy, Nick DeSantis, being the sporting director. That changed last year. Frank Klopas had a larger role, but everything was done in committee with, you know, an ongoing conversation between Adam Braz, Frank Klopas. There's another VP, Richard Lejeune, has stepped in the technical area. Mauro Biello is an assistant, and Nick DeSantis being the international VP, meaning he would get the players from Argentina, from Costa Rica, and more recently Didier Drogba from England, obviously from Ivory Coast, but from Chelsea in England. So you know they were talking over about lineup decisions, about tactical decisions. It looks complex from the outside, and in a way it is. I think it was meant to downplay any conflicts, any sort of tensions between the different levels of management. And now, I want to reassert that the impact is not your normal business organization. It is a family-owned business in a way, and you have an owner who's been known to be involved in this, trying to get the best, you know, the best conditions for his team, to help his team succeed as much as he can. And I think over the years he's become a bit more not detached, but he's been trying to put a distance between him and day-to-day decisions, for example. But he cares a lot about the fate of his team. So he'll put in more money, suggest players at times, in order for the team to get better results, maybe. I have the feeling that the impact might not be in the same situation if you had a more detached president, and not necessarily in a good way, because you would have somebody who's not invested, who doesn't care as much about how his team is doing, and, you know, somebody who's more detached, who will see that maybe the team is not making money year in, year out, would probably cut down on the spending that's going on. So, in a way, you want that owner that cares about the Montreal Impact, but you just need to get the right fit with the coach. And, again, I think for the rest of the season, Biello's the man to maybe make it, you know, come up with a turnaround for the Impact.
Is there a worry, though, that you have a CCL final berth, then you bring in Drogba and Venegas? The squad, for people on the outside, not in Montreal, looks like a team that could contend in the playoffs, could contend going maybe even to an MLS Cup, was what we were talking about a few weeks ago. Is there a worry that the franchise, the structure, is maybe too volatile, maybe not professional enough for a team to really succeed on the field?
I don't know about that. It's been said that, yes, you would need to put order in that house. You would need to streamline the decision-making process. I think that everybody that's tried to do that has failed and has only created an atmosphere of tension here in Montreal. And I think Jesse Marsh had great ideas. He had a plan, but I don't think he realized how much of an obstacle and how much friction there would be between him and ownership and the local culture of this organization. And you could say that, you know, maybe the Impact management needs to grow up and get, grow a tougher, thicker skin. But I just don't see it happening. So they need to get the person that will, choose his battles and be confident enough in his own ideas to actually make them come across. And if results are successful, if the results come, then you that person will get the credibility or the coaching staff deserves. It's not an easy situation, but I don't think it's so different than other clubs around the world. And it might be different than your regular MLS franchise, but I don't think that you don't have conditions here to succeed. I think the Impact has good players in the back line and at the up top in the creative midfield decisions. They have a bit of an issue with the defensive midfield position, but they still have the pieces to make the playoffs. And if there's a positive vibe around the team, just like there was at the end of June, early July, they could surprise a lot of people during playoffs if they make it there.
Well, this weekend will be another game for them. They're going to take on Chicago on Saturday. Of course, a little bit ironically, Frank Klopas' old club, he will not be around, I would expect. He'll speak to the media, I believe, on Tuesday. We haven't heard from him just yet. But Didier Drogba is a name that you kind of referenced there up top. We still haven't really seen him in extended minutes. He was kind of pegged as the guy that could maybe take this team over the top. He's a now play. He's not a future play. Do you know how close he is? Is he somebody that we'll see this weekend? And how might his impact change things? There's still 11 games left. Even if he came back in maybe two or three, he'd still have almost a third of a season to play.
That's right. That's right. And he came in not really ready to play, but I was at practice. I thought he looked pretty sharp when I saw him in action. Unfortunately, he got hurt during his brief appearance against Philadelphia. And we still don't know how long it's going to take for him to recover from that. And you're right. If he doesn't play on Saturday, then maybe it's best that he gets enough rest so that he can attack the last 10 games, the last stretch of the season. And I'm sure he can, obviously he can help the Impact. It's just a matter of, putting the right pieces around him. And against Philadelphia, what was missing was Ignacio Piatti. And his injuries, I think, is more of a concern right now because the Impact had success before Drogba arrived. And Piatti, you always get a sense that maybe he tries to do a little too much. He's he'll take an extra touch at times, not always looking for his teammates when he should. But he's still the one that makes things happen for them, and he's really one notch above most of the players in the league, I think. So if he can come through his injury, he'll be the one linking up with Drogba, and that could really, really make the Impact better instantly. Just like, you know, the Impact played Toronto FC this weekend. They didn't have Piaget, they didn't have Drogba, yet they had the better chances during the game. Even though Jovinko and Bradley were playing, Altidore scored. I think that the rest of the teams between Toronto and Montreal are really similar, pretty even. It's just a matter of designated players making the difference right now for Toronto. And, I would venture to say that if they could actually meet in the playoffs with Drogba and Piatti healthy, I think finally the Impact could actually win a game in Toronto if they had to play there. But, you know, that's a scenario that would probably motivate the players right now, something to look forward to, and probably something Biello might use to change the atmosphere around, to challenge the players so that they have the same mentality that they have during the Champions League. And then, you know, we'll see about Justin Matthews. He looked sharp coming back from injury now. He played 30 minutes on Saturday, and I think he's someone that, you know, needs to step up, especially as on Saturday against Chicago, where the team needs to get points again.
You have the loss to Toronto. You had the loss at home to Philadelphia. Things haven't been going as well. Is this something that the fans in the city that they were wanting in terms of Klopas moving on? Was he someone that they were liked the way the team was going, or is this a move for the fans as well as the front office?
Fans weren't very happy about the way the team was playing in the last month. There's been a lot of criticism of the tactical choices, the system that's been used, 4-2-3-1, with a lone forward that was often isolated. Klopas had started to use Dominic Ogiero in that position, and he was more successful using Ogiero rather than Jack McInerney. McInerney is somebody who had a lot of talent for scoring goals, but did not seem to fit that system very well, didn't seem to be compatible with most of his teammates, and did not display the type of work ethic or body language that, you know, makes him popular with fans when he's not scoring. Didn't seem to care much about, you know, running and pressing. And we could be the ones getting that wrong because we don't know him enough. But, you know, it was something that was apparent over the course of his season and a half here. The Impact, Klopas had made his decisions. He was unpopular with the way he's treated Patrice Bernier, not using him at all, preferring to use Nigel Rio-Coker, Marco Donadel, who's been improving, I have to say. That puzzled a lot of fans as well. And also, substitutions during the game. And, you know, I'll give you an example. On Saturday, the Impact, is losing by two goals. They actually score one, and then Laurent Simon gets ejected. And rather than, you know, putting in maybe risk it with another forward or an offensive midfielder, Klopas chose to use his third sub to bring in a defender, and he took out Andres Romero, last year's MVP, who had given you who prepared the goal for Juro during that game, and he put in a defender, Eric Miller. I think, you know, it's a conservative move that didn't sit well with most of the fans.
Right before we get you out of here, Pat, two quick ones, two times I'm going to put you on the spot. First, will the Impact make the playoffs? I just want your quick answer here. What's your gut feeling?
I think so. I think they will make the playoffs. And I think it might be hard at first for Biello to get the results he's looking for. I think when Drogba and Piatti obviously return from injury, it'll help. But I still believe that they'll make the playoffs, and maybe only because there are two expansion teams in the Eastern Conference. But, you know, it's 2015 is that season for the Impact, and maybe they make it, they squeak it in sixth place.
Now, what about 2016? What are the odds that we're seeing Mauro Biello, or do you think there's going to be someone from outside here? Just your, like I said, just your gut feeling. Where are you going off right now?
If they make the playoffs, I think Biello's the man for 2016. I think that the organization hopes that it'll work and that they'll give him a proper shot next year as well.
There you have it. Pat LeDuc, at Pat LeDuc 15 on Twitter. Lots of great stuff from him. It helps sometimes if you speak French, but Pat, I hit up that Google Translate. Make sure I read all your stuff that way.
All right.
Montreal hosting Chicago Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live, TVA Sports in Canada. Thanks again, Pat. Enjoy your day, man.
Okay, take care.
Big thanks to Pat LeDuc for some of that insight there. An interesting situation in Montreal. I think the family-run business side is something that fans of other clubs may not always think about when they think about the impact. So we'll see how that one ends up. Of course, a while to go here in the regular season and some decisions to be made in the offseason for Joey Saputo and his franchise up there in Quebec. Also in rivalry week here, the early game on Sunday. I missed this one because I was on a long PATH train journey to Harrison, New Jersey, but Seattle eked out a 2-1 victory against Portland, and the theme after this one was a skin-of-their-teeth win for Seattle that they desperately needed. I mean, this was really a must-win game. 64,000 people. You had to get this one done at home, even though you didn't have Clint Dempsey. But apart from that, it was the referees, and that was something that was talked a lot about this weekend. This time, Caleb Porter not happy with a couple calls. The first one, the first goal by Omafemi Martins, felt that his players, one of his defenders, was pulled down in the box by Martins before the finish. And then the PK wasn't happy about that one as well, Oba being taken down in the box by the goalkeeper. Let's start with the first one, the goal. Did you have any problem with this? It's a crazy situation. It's a loose ball in the box. It's bouncing around everywhere. Nat Borchers gets his pocket picked. A really bad play by him, but
it's
Nelson Valdez with a hustle.
Well, awful play by Jack Jewsbury. Passing it back to Borchers.
Right, you got to clear it. I counted. I think they had about five chances to clear this ball. Didn't happen.
And the whole situation, I just think from start, it was just awkward because both teams' players are running into each other and falling over. We watched the replay. When I watched it initially, I thought that Martins fouled. I think it's Alvis Powell.
Yeah, I think so too.
It is, yeah.
But then you watch the replay. There's no great angle, but if he doesn't have a hand tugging his jersey, there's no way that he could have fouled him. Yeah.
No. It looks like both are kind of – it's that grappling move from both, and Powell has the position on the ball.
I think Powell tries to body Martins off and misses his body.
He gets
and
a little bit
down.
Out of balance
and then he falls. And he loses the ball a little bit, and that's when Oba pounces, and then he gets
And we see Oba. He never gives up on plays. He's so physical, so quick, and he's always going to stay with the play until he gets the opportunity. And he finished it pretty calmly as well, so it was an impressive – I thought it's an impressive first goal.
Yeah, no surprise from there. And then the PK, that was another one that came under controversy. Ball over the top, he touches it through – the legs, and then just gets clattered down. There was some feeling from the Timbers that this was either a shot or he wasn't going to catch up with it. Either way, that the play was over once he'd made that touch. I tend to disagree. I think this is a clear-cut penalty. He's going to catch that ball if the goalkeeper doesn't come.
If the goalkeeper is not there, he's going to get to the ball.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
So that has to – I mean, initially, I thought penalty, no red card. Yeah. And then, like, on the broadcast, they were saying penalty, red card, like it has to be one and the other. But then later, when Alan Kelly came out with his comments, I kind of understood what he was saying. That, I mean, he can call a penalty without the red card. Like, the play, it was not an obvious goal-scoring opportunity because there was Portland players rushing back to the net.
And I agree with that. And then outside of that, Portland kind of dominates the game.
They 100% dominated.
And I liked – we talked about on Thursday, the conversation was Adi or Milano, and they went with both. And it was interesting. Milano gives you speed. They both give you height. Milano came in and played under Adi as Adi played back to goal. You saw Adi trying to knock down long balls down to Milano's feet.
They really went direct.
Something we haven't seen.
Yep.
And I would like to see them do it more. I would like to see them try and stick with it. The only issue, and we say it every week – is they open up space and Nagby doesn't capitalize on it.
Yep.
So they pull the back line farther away. There's that space between the back line and the midfield, and Nagby just isn't aggressive enough to run into it.
Yeah, that's something that's going to have to change the rest of the year if they want to get to the top of their capabilities. The Timbers with a loss that they're going to be ruining for a while. LA Galaxy lose again as well on the road. It's really no surprise at this point. That's their bugaboo. The road has not been kind to LA. 2-7-5 this year, 13 goals scored on the road, 24 allowed. This is maybe the most incredible stat in MLS right now, in my opinion. LA's goal differential at home plus 27 on the road, negative 11. One of those negative 11 came via San Jose, the 1-0 victory for them. They've now won four in a row against Colorado, SKC, DC, and LA. All those are good wins. They remain outside the playoff field, but they have a game in hand on Seattle. All of a sudden, a team that we kind of snoozed on are a legitimate playoff contender in the West.
Yeah, we've talked about it now the last week. From 0 to 11, you know, everyone on the field has been competent. Everyone's played well. It's unfortunate there was a red card in this game because that's the story people are taking away. And I think San Jose probably would have won this game anyway. They didn't do enough with the man advantage. They didn't score. But I thought that they were playing comfortably the entire game, even when it was even.
Look, they beat the Galaxy. I mean, the Galaxy, they have not been doing well on the road, as the stats say. But they're still the Galaxy. It's still a big win. And they're still looking really good for the playoffs right now. They have the easiest schedule in the league for the rest of the season.
Yeah, how many games at home? I mean, it's like
six of the remaining eight games. I mean, you got Philly. Then you got the huge game September 12th at home against the Sounders. Montreal, they travel to NYC, which, I mean, they could be out of the playoff race by then. RSL, and then you got a tough three-game stretch into the season. Vancouver, SKC, Dallas, but two of those are at home.
Big opportunity for San Jose. Hopefully we will perhaps talk to Dom Kinnear on Thursday's show. We've put in the request. We would love to talk to him, old friend of the show. That's all we have here in this first segment. Let us know what you think about Montreal Impact coaching changes. Do you agree? Are they going the right route? What should happen in the offseason? Any comments on Rivalry Week? We want them for that mailbag. We got a lot of swag. I'm looking at it. Every time I tell you, I want to give it away, get it out of this office. When we come back, we'll talk about U.S. Men's National Team and the rest of the weekend.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey there, it's Sasha Question from the New York Red Bulls, and you are listening to Extra Time Radio.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, David Goss, Andrew Wiebe. Metal Mondays are back, and that had some good potential to start, and then it went right down the cheesy metal route. No, you didn't think so?
I don't know.
Taking shots at the fans' music right off the bat.
Yeah.
That doesn't strike me as one Simon would like. I think Simon, he likes it to be a little bit darker, a little bit more foreboding. Who knows? He's not around.
Well,
he's busy.
This song is called Phoenix.
Okay.
David Christensen out there, Chicago Fire fan, who felt this was apropos to their last week or so of performances, as well as their fantastic standing.
A big draw for them this weekend. And by big draw, I mean probably mostly disappointing. They need wins at this point to get to the playoffs, especially against a fellow riser like Orlando City. We'll talk about that in a second. A big rain delay on that one, a contentious own goal. Kyle Larin thinks it probably should have been his. It would have set the rookie record had he been given it. But we're going to start with a team that needs a phoenix, needs a miracle to rise from the ashes. That's New York City FC. Another loss for them. They lost 4 of 6.
Do they need a miracle
in August?
Or do they need a large, slightly overweight, but fantastic and intelligent English soccer player?
Only played 60 this weekend, Frank Lampard. I assume that's who you're talking about right there. But there was a little bit of a brouhaha. I'll take that back. There was a... wasn't even a back and forth, but there were some interesting comments after their 2-1 loss at Yankee Stadium this weekend to Columbus Crew SC. Basically, Jason Kreis questioned his team, and he was very public about it. He was very frustrated in the post-game press conference, as you can imagine he would be. Their season going south before this game, players, coaches alike both said, this is a must-win game. Mix Discrude said he even said, we will win it. They didn't win it, of course. Afterwards, here's what Kreis had to say to the Yes Network, and you know those post-game interviews before they get into the presser. Asked about the lack of leadership by the color commentator there. He said, I think we lack some leadership qualities. I think we also lack some winning mentality and a little bit of attitude that we need from some of our older players. When the going gets tough, we seem to just kind of go with it, and there doesn't seem to be anybody that wants to stand up and make a difference. That seems pretty pointed, Dave. Asked about leadership and then comes out and pinpoints older players.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, so then Lampard later...
He did. Lampard responded to different comments. Kreis in the press conference basically said, look, The players need to show if they want to be here. The coaching staff does. I'm not so sure the players do, which is pointed in itself. Not quite as targeted as the old players' line was, but Lampard said he thinks it's a fair statement, but that he doesn't think the effort is in question.
And I think it. I actually interpret it more as kind of him a salvo over the ownership, saying these aren't the guys we need to win. I need guys who are dedicated and who are in their prime and
hungry.
Ready to play. Because he didn't want Pirlo, we know. He didn't want he didn't want Xavi.
We can guess.
He said he didn't want an older player.
We can guess that that was not his preferred route for designated player. He's never said that publicly. That's a good caveat to make here.
Yeah.
But there's certainly a route here where you make that guess and it's not that far-fetched.
And then he comes out on the field, loses 2-1 at home to Columbus, and Patrick Mullins lays off the ball for Andrew Jacobson for the only goal.
Yep.
And you have Pirlo, Lampard, Discrude, and Villa in your team. You have
no
Iraola,
in the starting lineup.
Angelina, no Poku. And yet Jacobson's the only one who scores, and Patrick Mullins sets him up. Not sets him up because it was a tough shot on its own. So I can see it. We talked, I think it was with Caelan Carpenter, it may have been someone else who talked about having winners but learning how to win as a unit. Mm-hmm. And what's tough is if you bring guys, I mean, you're looking at Premier League, Champions League, La Liga, World Cup winners in this team. But learning to win as one unit is a different concept was what he was explaining to us. And so that's something, because people will say, well, there's winners in this team. That's the thing that they're lacking.
Right, and, but is the team a winner? And you threw a lot of these pieces, a lot of these quote-unquote winners, the Pirlos and Lampards of the world, Iraolas, Angelino, you basically changed the team
mid-season. And you were supposed to have Lampard there from day one to build that culture, and you haven't. And he's been in and out. And then Pirlo comes in late. And Iraola and Angelino, who have shown talent, come in late. And so I think that that's the issue. I don't know who Kreis is pointing at. Maybe for Kreis, it's just a little bit of, well, this wasn't working, so let me try this now. He's just a coach. He's got to try and push the right buttons.
Tactics.
So that could be all that it is. It's starting to come to, right, this is it's now or never for
Yeah,
him.
It's 7 games left. 6 of the 7 are against playoff teams. The one team that's not a playoff team is San Jose. We're including Orlando City as one of those playoff teams because right now they've jumped the Montreal Impact, but I think we can all agree they are no playoff team as it currently stands.
Whoa.
I know. I'm coming hard here. It's a tough route for NYCFC. Kreis also talked about kind of not the plight, but the situation that an expansion team comes under and how you have to be patient, that the league's not really set up for them to succeed. I think he also understands that that's going to be the expectations probably of City Football Group based on what they spent. We'll have to see what happens depending on what happens in New York City.
And the issue is, so Orlando also went out and built a team. I think they expected to have more success the first year because they had something built already somewhat.
They got ravaged by injury.
And they have pieces for the future. NYCFC did not spend any of these pieces for the future. So if Kreis says, well, you know, it wasn't going to happen year one, and you say they spent that money, they're going to say, well, it's not like Pirlo and Lampard are here for the long term.
Right.
These aren't guys for the future like Rochez and Rivas are. So then the question becomes, do you have to revamp and rebuild after year one? And then you're again going to say, well, I can't get it done in 1 year. So what's the timeline of what's being built?
A lot of interesting stuff going on with New York City FC. I know we have a lot of fans out there listening to the show. Let us know what you think of your club at this very moment. What's going on? What do you want to see? What does the offseason mean to you?
And in perfect form, we ignored the Columbus Crew who got a 2-1 road victory.
Hey, look, props to the Columbus Crew. Love the Crew. I think they're starting to get it together. I still have questions about the defense. There's no doubt about that.
A positive question they have going right now, and then we can move on, is at left midfield between Miram and Cedric and Mbwata. Yeah. You have the great question
Mbwati?
Of Mbwata. Mbwata, right?
Oh, really?
Mbwati? Mbwata? I don't know. The great question is they're both playing well. So it's like, who do I start? Not in a bad way, in a positive way. And it seems like Miram might be pushing, or Cedric might be pushing Miram. Yeah.
We talked about it with the Red Bulls. Competition breeds better performances. That's going down for the Crew right now. Props to them for getting this big victory on the road. Good call. We won't want to leave them behind. They'll get that angry black and gold.
Oh, we already have the email in the mailbag today.
Perfect. Perfect. In more expansion news, Orlando City, as I mentioned, 1-1 draw with the Fire after a long, long rain delay down there in Orlando. Dave, Citrus Bowl just soaked. Props to all those fans who waited it out. I don't know if I would have had the gear, for one, to weather that storm, and B, the patience, but good job to all of you. That 1-1 draw, notable for one main reason, I guess, in my mind. That's a goal that will not stand for Kyle Larin. He thought he had the rookie goal-scoring record. It was not to be a cross over the top in the 30-some minute. He thought he got his head on. He said he hoped he would get the goal. It looks to me like it was the shoulder of Eric Gehrig, so he will not get that one. Too bad for Kyle, but still a great season he's having. All the same, sticking out east, New England, 1-0 winners against the Philadelphia Union. Diego Fagundes gets the goal in this one. But, Dave, it's Jermaine Jones. He's back, and this is really the difference for this team.
We've said it a lot, and they struggle without him. He comes back in, and immediately they put up more good results. It seems like it's the
five
same
games unbeaten right
it
now.
It seems like it's the same story as last year. Struggling throughout the summer. They've had some weird, you know, off weeks. They had a weather delay as well, so their game got – so it's like they haven't been in the spotlight over the last few weeks. But now with Jones, once again, I look at them and I say this is a team that has Rowe, they have Fagundes, they have Wynn, they have Bunbury, they have Charlie Davies, they have Aguadero.
Farrell's having a great season.
They have enough goal scorers to get wins with Jones, with that defensive cover and with that tenacity that he brings. They can beat anyone. If they can get themselves into the three spot, I think that would be ideal for them closing out the regular season.
All about seeding right now. I think the Revs have to feel pretty good about their playoff chances. Some other results to cast our eyes onto here. Vancouver goes to Texas for the ninth time in their MLS history. For the ninth time, they lose, which is just an incredible stat. I really can't believe that. They couldn't luck out just once. Well, it didn't happen for this one. The Dynamo 2-0 winners on that. They're trying to climb for that playoff spot out west. Vancouver feeling pretty good.
The Whitecaps get melted by the Texas
Heat. How long were you sitting on that
it
one?
I saw your eyes kind of get large.
Speaking of the West and that playoff race, we kind of were half joking when we talked about the Rapids maybe making a run. Well,
Don't joke about that
because they beat Sporting Kansas City 2-1 this weekend. The message being, if you would like your team to be jinxed, I, Andrew Wiebe, take Venmo and PayPal. So if you want to hit me up, I'll proclaim whatever opponent you decide to be the best team in MLS, they will promptly go on a three-game losing streak. So props to the Rapids. Kevin Doyle, what is his fourth goal in four games?
I believe so, yeah. They were the best team defensively, but statistically in the league. And if he's going to score goals, they have enough to at least push to the last day.
Yeah, still a question mark about the long-term future of that roster. But hey,
health of Vicente Sanchez.
He's the key, it seems like, from a string-pulling perspective. Rarely able to stay on the field for a long stretch in a row. Moving out throughout the league on Saturday night. As well, let's see here. FC Dallas knocking out our RSL.
I was going to see if you were going to get there.
I was going all the way down the list. What haven't we talked about?
Javi Mo with a PK miss. Hits the post on his classic stutter step. Chacho Akindele scored his. Fabian Castillo gets the goal. Not only that, Fabian Castillo gets called up to the Colombian first team national team for the first
time. And this is a big deal. This is a big deal because you remember when Diego Chará came to the U.S., a couple years back to the Portland Timbers, he basically said that I've written off my Columbia career by moving here.
And we've seen what Carlos Valdez had when he was trying to get in the World Cup team.
Have to move all around the world to stay in the team. Yep.
And this is a team where in Fabian Castillo's position, you have Cuadrado, you have James Rodriguez, you have some of the best young attackers on the planet, and they still call him in. Italy calls in Giovinco and Pirlo.
Yep.
A lot of national team coaches at a high level respecting and looking at MLS production, except one, of course.
Well, look, the thing about Castillo, huge congratulations to him. You know what? I think I've picked up that huge fill-in, the congratulations. I think that's a Jurgen Klinsmann thing that I may have picked up. I got to work on that. But look, it's a game in the United States, but it's great to see him get a chance with them. You mentioned it, though, some big call-ups. Jovinko's the biggest, I think, and Tim Bezpachinko basically called it a game changer. He said this is a global benchmark for MLS. Unfortunately, in this game, we mentioned it, Jovinko with an adductor issue, a tightness of the adductor. He will go to Italy. He actually departed right after the game. He will not play in either of those two games, which is unfortunate. I think we'd all like to see what he would do right now against the likes of Malta and I think Bulgaria.
Bulgaria was the other one. Another name we forgot, Kaká. He gets recalled to the Brazilian national team. Those games also
Brazil?
In the U.S. But
who's
still,
that?
They're bringing a full roster for these games because it's their last games before World Cup qualifying. And Neymar suspended for the beginning of World Cup qualifying because of the Copa America red card. So if they see Kaká as an offensive option, I mean, that could be huge as well for the coverage of the league down there. He's a saint in Brazil. I was there. We were both there. He was on the field before the opener, even though he wasn't part of this team. He's one of those personalities down there. So it's not as hard for him to get noticed if he's in form. But still, it's exciting to see.
Definitely. Speaking of Brazil, the U.S. will play them next Tuesday, 8 p.m. Unimas and UDN. But before that, on Friday, Peru, 7 p.m. Eastern. Fox Sports 1, Unimas and UDN as well. Jurgen Klinsmann released his roster, 23 players. And it was, I'm not going to call it a surprise, but he's kind of moved away from this transition phase, as he called it, in which the U.S. was really relying on a lot of young players. Tim Howard back in camp for these games. Jeff Cameron back in camp. Matt Beisler is back. Jermaine Jones, of course, is back. Jones and Beisler back for the first time since February. Cameron, I think, last was in April. And Tim Howard, of course, last pulled on the U.S. jersey in Salvador, Belgium. Yeah. That round of 16 loss in which he stood on his head.
Secretary of Defense.
Still in there, Ventura Alvarado, the likes of John Brooks, those fellas. An issue at outside back. Timmy Chandler is hurt. Fabian Johnson is hurt.
And they will both be hurt for what we're calling the CONCACAF Cup.
Yeah, it appears so. That's the name of that October 10th match against Mexico, which I think is just the Confederation Cup's playoff.
Yeah.
But I think you blew it. You know, CONCACAF Cup could have been something else unique and cool and, you know, that happens a lot. Whereas this is very much, it doesn't have to happen every 4 years. It may not happen next time.
But it's the big game, and right now fullback's the question. Greg Garza, I would assume, gets a start at left back to see what he can do. Tim Reams played time there. Jeff Cameron's the funny story because Klinsmann said, I want you to be a center back at Stoke. He's now the starting center back at Stoke for probably the next 2 months as well with Shawcross out. And now he's probably going to ask him to play right back unless he brings Yedlin in and plays him at right back, which is why it was odd to see him listed as a midfielder. And he clearly not fit, not getting a lot of minutes with Tottenham. So there's a lot of question marks there.
Looks like he'll go out on loan as well, DeAndre Yedlin. A lot of different teams being linked with him. Denmark, Italy, Spain, some unnamed teams in Europe as well. Championship clubs like Bolton, Birmingham City, Derby County, Norwich City, West Brom, all coming after him. West Brom, of course, in the Premier League. We'll see what happens with DeAndre Yedlin. It looks very likely that he'll get loaned out. Another note from this one, Andrew Wooten got his first call-up.
Yeah.
5 goals in 5 games with Sandhausen in the 2 Bundesliga. So he'll make at least his first camp with the U.S. national team. He seems very, very excited. Josie Altidore is in this. For Peru, though, a quick note, there will not be Clint Dempsey or Michael Bradley. They will stick around to take each other on, basically.
Yeah.
Toronto, Seattle, in Seattle on the 5th, the day after that Peru game. So they'll play in that game and then rejoin their teammates. Let's see. I think that's all we have here. The U.S. coming up. We'll preview that more in depth on Thursday. Until then, let's hit the mailbag. There is an insane U.S. national team inspired movie that we just have to talk about.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hola, les habla su amigo William Yarbrough, portero del Club León y de la selección de Estados Unidos. Y estás escuchando Extra Time Radio. Tuesday.
Back on Extra Time Radio. Joining us in the studio, Ariel Castillo. I'm Andrew Wiebe, David Goss. This was what, David, this was Simon Borg's walk-up song?
Well, we got, well, I actually
that's
should.
A red card. Something like
Dane
that.
Dane Kozneck sent us a long list of DJ options for today's show, which I appreciate and I will use
did
more
he,
of them.
Did he drop his affiliation in here? Do we know what kind of swag he might want?
No, we don't. But he did say, I feel like Simon walk into arena to this, not sure why.
Okay, okay. Maybe we'll get him something Borg. Yeah, do you know anything? Who's the band Nero?
The group, the DJ, the artist, the people.
You're a music expert here.
I've actually interviewed them.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So you do actually know who they are.
Yeah. I do.
What's the Twitter version of what they're about?
What do you mean?
What's 140 character breakdown?
If you want your face rattled off in a field full of a lot of people in tank tops.
Oh,
that's like
yeah.
the Nero wheelhouse, I think.
That sounds like a good day.
Tank tops, face rattling, all sorts of things like
ears
that.
Ears bleeding.
Sweet, sweet. Let's jump right in. What do you got for us,
No
Dave?
Sleeves till Brooklyn. Well,
That was well done.
I teased it a little before, so let me give it now. Dana Miner emails in and says, Kai Kamara could score 25 goals, provide 12 assists, and find a cure for cancer, and he still would not win MVP. Columbus Crew SC are not one of the favored few teams, and intriguingly, never will be.
Well, what I would say is that curing cancer doesn't have anything to do with the MVP race.
And I think if he did, I think if he did, the MVP trophy would be the least of his worries at that
point.
That's
right. That's right.
Because he'd be looking at a Nobel Peace Prize.
That's like a subversion of a Chris Rock joke. He cured cancer. But what about those assists?
There you go.
I don't know. I feel like we're always talking about Kai Kamara. I mean, maybe that's within this world, but I feel like all I'm always talking about how great he is, and they just seem to keep winning. So.
Well, he is the Golden Boot leader, and he is not considered the MVP race leader. Mm. So I think people could be upset about that.
I think some of that was that the Crew hit that little lull in the middle of the season, so there was this feeling of like, you know, ultimately the goals have to come to something. Like, it is about team success. So Wando scores 27 goals. He wins MVP because the Quakes are unstoppable in that season. You know, BWP, they go to the playoffs. He scores all those goals. That's why. So if they go to the playoffs and he wins the Golden Boot, I think he's got a great chance because Jovinko's not in the superhuman form he was a little while ago.
Okay, well, let's move on a little bit to something we all are familiar with, and that's Euro snob soccer fans. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Sergio Hernandez, phenomenal email. He went to the San Jose LA game Friday night, and he said he was a little annoyed by all the Liverpool Gerrard jerseys he saw. He said there were a lot of people there just to see Gerrard. He heard people talking that had never watched an MLS game before. He said, I guess if it pulls in new fans, it's okay. But as a Quake fan, I'd prefer to see less Liverpool jerseys and more, maybe even LA Galaxy Gerrard jerseys, even though he doesn't like the Galaxy. And he sent us 7 different pictures of Gerrard Liverpool jerseys, which is just dedication. So Sergio's definitely getting
it. It's a public place, so you can take pictures of whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are different degrees to the whole Eurosnob thing, because there's the Eurosnob who actively talks down on North American soccer, and then there are some people that we can sometimes categorize as Eurosnobs who just aren't familiar yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I think a lot of those people who go to the MLS games in another league jersey are maybe just ones that aren't familiar yet.
And you're hoping that maybe next time they're around, they're, you know, maybe they're in an LA Gerrard jersey, or maybe they watched that game and they said, oh wait, the Quakes have won 4 straight, they just beat Gerrard in LA, I might get down on this.
I mean, they obviously don't hate it enough to stay away, right? Like, they still paid their money and went. So I feel like there's a kernel there that's curious enough to find out what we're about.
And we're going to send a San Jose scarf out to you. What's his name?
Sergio.
Sergio, as well as a Steven Gerrard Liverpool jersey. Just you know, just for
just because we have one lying.
We also have a an Oyo Will Trapp figurine. We'll send that out to the Crew fan.
To Dana, I believe.
It's not an MVP
Dana
award,
Miner.
But it's something.
And so we already gave away the Crazy 8 shoes last show, which I'm not as happy about as you are, which we will be sending out. Scott Poole sent us 2 good emails this week. This one, though, is about a similar thing. He said, talking about great games, Sounders versus Portland, he says there's a Community Shield match in 2010 when the Timbers were still USL, but the Sounders were already in MLS. They bust up to Seattle. OJ Obatola scored a goal assisted by Ryan Poor. It was an interesting game.
Ryan Poor, there's a name from way back. Casey Wiz.
Apparently, there you go. Apparently, at the time, they sat them in the Hawks Nest, so they were able to chirp Casey Keller, and they beat the MLS team as a USL team. He said it's one of his favorite games of all time. So he is getting a Portland Timbers scarf. And Gary Mock emailed us, and he said he was living in college in Austin, Texas. He's a Sounders fan. He's friends with a Timbers fan. And they'd go back and forth. So they made a bet over a contest. And they said the loser has to buy the winner tickets to go see their team against FC Dallas, because that's the closest opponent.
Right, right.
That game, Seattle won 4-2. And he says every single time they play, he texts his friend a picture of him at the Seattle FC Dallas game that he had to buy him tickets for.
Aww.
And says good luck. So
I love that.
I know.
Like, it keeps them together.
Yeah,
it's really sweet.
You know, the rubbing it in.
I
mean, that is male friendship, really. It's just a string of one-upsmanship and making fun of each other. Do you have anything over there for him? What about these Sounders figurines over here?
Ah, he could get figurines.
Yeah,
he could text his
figurines.
Friend pictures
I think that's
of figurines.
Since he's an old school fan too. I think those are like from 2013. So
they're vintage.
Old logo and everything. That's
is that
right.
That's vintage now.
Still in box. Mint in box.
And we had a lot of emails. We talked about what can you miss a game for? I missed my game that I was supposed to play in, but we asked about missing as a fan
for a musical.
What's it? I missed it to go see one of the moments of Broadway history.
What was it?
Hamilton is the name of the show, so you should go see it. I've already pimped it
on
the show.
I knew he was going to sell it hard if I made fun of him there. Yeah.
Scott Poole gets another email in the show, And he says he missed his own graduation to make sure he was at Timbers Whitecaps. He also left a wedding early to make sure he went to Timbers Sounders. Totally worth it. Now, I think it's interesting because those are both Cascadia Cup matchups.
Well, also,
so, like, would he have done it for Timbers Crew?
I mean, if it's not your own wedding.
Oh, you just had to throw the crew. You just had to throw the crew. Oh, Freudian slip.
Would he do it for Timbers Atlanta United 2017?
I don't know. I don't know. As long as it's not his own wedding, I mean, he really doesn't have to be there.
And I think the end of the wedding is when you do dip out. You know, it's kind of it's like everyone's drunk, that peak, and it's going down. You've hit the open bar. Now you hit the game. That's how it works.
That might be true. And let's close out on one we got from Matt in LA. He said he went on a Euro trip. It wasn't a soccer vacation, but he did watch the USMNT third place loss to Panama in Sweden at 11 p.m. local time, which means they lost in PKs around 2 a.m., which sounds pretty terrible. Kept up on his fantasy team, set his alarm for 4 a.m. to fix his team, was in St. Petersburg, saw a 2018 World Cup stadium, as well as buying a scarf for Zenit. And then he ended it, and I was so excited because the subject to the email was Joel Limpere's story. He said, we ended up in Tallinn, Estonia for a few days because of a flight cancellation.
I have no concept.
Okay. Yeah. we were searching for stuff to do when he landed on the league schedule, the Meistriliiga, the Estonian first division. Lo and behold, a few miles from their hotel was a team named Nome Kalju. This is a test of how many names I can butcher in one email.
I wrote this, and like, this is like a ghostwritten email just to throw you off.
And that's the current team of Joel Limpere, who, unfortunately, their flight was the day that the game was, and they couldn't actually go. But he said he highly recommends, if you're going on a trip, to look up whatever soccer events are occurring. But it made me ask this question, and I will give away anything that we have. What is the most random former MLS player that you've seen play in a league game? We could say not live, but I would like to hear live. Like, I want to know if you were in Cyprus and you saw Shane O'Neill train for 20 minutes. But, you know, if you were in the Philippine third division, if you see anyone playing.
Thailand for Suni Saad.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to know. You know, the Scandinavia is obviously a big one. I would love to hear what the best story
is. The most obscure MLS sighting in world soccer. Let us know what it is. We'll give you some prizes. Like David said, he'll give you away anything. I don't know. We've got a lot of stuff.
I will give you my arm and my leg.
You don't want them. They're not that great. big thanks to Ellie Castillo. Big thanks to Pat LeDuc for shining some light on that situation in Montreal. Thanks to you, Dave. I'm Andrew Wiebe. We'll be back here on Thursday.